The following is a special presentation of Tony Curry Radio. Want the real story behind the sound bites and headlines? Let's find the facts. Remember, it's not a conspiracy theory if it's the truth. You are not paranoid or confused. You just need to know.
Welcome in, everybody. It's time for Need to Know on TKR, another edition this week. Want to start off by saying that we've got a Super Bowl matchup now. It will be the San Francisco 49ers against the Kansas City Chiefs, the marquee teams, both winning their games yesterday in the championship matchups. Great year for the Baltimore Ravens. It looked like it was the year of the Harbaugh family, but Patrick Mahomes was a very uncooperative guest showing up in Baltimore yesterday and leading the Chiefs to another Super Bowl. This will be the fifth for Patrick Mahomes. He's already won a couple of them in 6 years. He's been to the AFC Championship game every year. And isn't it ironic that so many of the records are falling by the wayside with he and Travis Kelce doing all the remarkable things they're doing for the Chiefs, right after we finally waved goodbye to what everybody considers the NFL GOAT, which I always think is a funny term because GOAT used to be a bad term in sports. If you were the GOAT, you were the guy that was responsible for blowing the game. But now it's GOAT, greatest of all time. Tom Brady, the universally hailed GOAT, has finally stepped away from professional football. And it's amazing that at the exact same time he exits stage left, possibly the actual GOAT, Patrick Mahomes, who is far more accomplished at this point of his career than Tom Brady was, and is just setting record after record after record, and leading his team to these ridiculous plateaus of performance. Maybe we are seeing the actual GOAT taking over when the previous GOAT has just left the game. So fascinating things to witness. And the Brock Purdy story at San Francisco, I wasn't going to spend a lot of time on this, but here I go. Brock Purdy was the last draft pick in the 2021 NFL draft. That title is Mr. Irrelevant. It's not just for Brock Purdy. It's anybody picked last in the draft. At some point, there was a writer that tagged that person, the last draft pick, Mr. Irrelevant. It's stuck now for about the last 25 years. But Mr. Irrelevant Brock Purdy out of Iowa State, of all places, has hardly been irrelevant in his pro career. He barely made the 49ers as a rookie, was put on the practice squad, not active for the first three quarters of the season last year in 2022. Now it's 2 years ago, but that was the regular season, of course, for the 23 Super Bowl. And the 49ers, starting with Trey Lance and then Jimmy Garoppolo as their solid top two quarterbacks, even had a third who I'm having trouble remembering who that was. I'll have to look that up. But they played three quarterbacks before they got down to Brock Purdy late in the year when everybody else was hurt. All Brock Purdy did was take the 49ers to the playoffs, to the championship game in Philadelphia, where he got hurt in the first quarter himself and was not the same, never had a chance to propel the 49ers beyond that spot. But he's come back this year with a vengeance, and he is leading the 49ers with their plethora of great weapons. Christian McCaffrey, it'll be his first Super Bowl. What a fantastic player. The son of Ed McCaffrey, who was an NFL legendary player in his years in Denver. But Christian McCaffrey's skill set, even superior to his dad's, it will be in the Super Bowl. Deebo Samuel, SEC fans are very familiar with from South Carolina. Just a multidimensional, just a electrifying player. So much great stuff for this Super Bowl. It's going to be remarkable to see because, of course, the Super Bowl ratings always off the charts. But now you've got the Taylor Swift factor on top of everything else. The Swifties will be tuned in, hoping to get a glimpse of their superhero as she watches her boyfriend, Travis Kelce, in the biggest game of all at Allegiant Stadium in Las Vegas. You can't make this stuff up. The script is spectacular for this Super Bowl. Taylor Swift, you might say, well, how can she be at the Super Bowl? She's playing a concert in Tokyo on Saturday night, the 10th of February. The Super Bowl, of course, is local kickoff in Las Vegas around 3 p.m., 3:30 on Sunday, the 11th. So she'll be in Japan. How can she be there? Well, there's this little thing called global time differences, and it is 16 hours in Tokyo ahead of Las Vegas. So when Taylor Swift wraps up her show, if she heads right to the jetport and boards her private plane, she is facing about a 12 and a half to 13 hour flight to Las Vegas, but she's 16 hours time difference. So technically, Taylor Swift will arrive before she leaves in Tokyo, in Las Vegas. I know that's hard to comprehend, but if everything goes according to Hoyle, Taylor Swift should touch down in Las Vegas Saturday night, Sunday morning, somewhere in the area of midnight or 1 a.m. The game's not till 3:30 on Sunday afternoon. It's not like she's going to be have airspace cleared and be rushed by helicopter to Allegiant Stadium, which, by the way, is about 3 miles from the airport. The airport in Las Vegas, if you've never been there, the Las Vegas airport, McCarran Airport, is the most convenient to everything happening in any city that you can possibly imagine. The airport is basically just a couple of miles from the Las Vegas Strip. And of course, Allegiant Stadium, close to the end of the row where Mandalay Bay and other places are on the south end of the Strip. So fascinating things happening in the Super Bowl, in the NFL, and it couldn't have worked out better. So with the ratings already off the charts, now you're going to have all the Swifties, I think 13, 14, 10, 11-year-old girls, and all the people obsessed with Taylor Swift are going to be tuning in to watch Travis Kelce and hopefully catch glimpses of their heroine. And it's going to be really a spectacular event. And here's an interesting thing. The halftime show played by Usher, he's the performer this year, the entertainer. Very interesting that the most heralded and successful and popular entertainer in the world is going to be in the stadium, but she's not performing. A lot of pressure on Usher to deliver a great show in the Super Bowl. So we're looking forward to that. But I was just going to quickly mention the participants in case you possibly missed it. But now, of course, I've just devoted about a 10-minute piece of my report this week to that. I also want to touch on breaking news, because on a much more serious note, over the weekend, there was an attack on a U.S. military installation in the country of Jordan, which is one of the border countries to Israel. It was a drone attack in the pre-dawn hours, so it was the middle of the night, and the attack was waged against our troops while they slept in their living quarters. So it was basically a sneak attack designed to do as much damage when that unit was not active as possible. Three American servicemen were killed. Over 30 are wounded. This is ridiculous. This was ordered by one of the proxy terrorist organizations being funded by the country of Iran. When Donald Trump left office, Iran was basically bankrupt. They didn't have money to support the infrastructure of their country, let alone be able to dole out millions and millions of dollars to the Houthis and the different terror groups, Hezbollah, Hamas, all the different offshoots of their philosophy that are waging terrorist activities and wars against a variety of factions. This is a Muslim on Muslim situations as well with the Shiites, which were the Iranians are, and the Sunnis, which a lot of the rest of the Arab world is. Not only that, but the vitriolic attacks on Israel and the United States. And this is enough, folks. This is enough. We don't need to attack a empty warehouse that may have or may not have munitions somewhere in Syria. We don't need to talk big about this won't be tolerated by America. America needs to hit and hit hard. When Donald Trump was president, his response to Iranian terrorist activities was to put terrible sanctions on Iran, get countries where they had stockpiled millions of their assets to put freezes on that so the Iranians didn't have access to those funds, and also threaten people like China to say, hey, we are by far your biggest consumers. Your economy is completely dependent on your doing business with the United States. Guess what? You do business with Iran, you buy oil from them, the number one sponsor of terrorism around the world. You do that and you are done in America. We're going to cut you off. We're not going to include you in our economy. If you like that lifeline and that economic engine, then you're going to have to not participate with the Iranians. We're putting sanctions on their ability to do business with other nations. And you either comply or that's it for you. We have no association anymore in terms of trade partners. And if you look, the trade imbalance between China and the United States is wide, wide gulf. What they buy from us as opposed to what we buy from them, it's like night and day. I think it's about a 70 to 80% trade imbalance of their goods coming this direction as opposed to our goods going their direction. So that was a big stick to carry. And when Iran balked and still was carrying out terrorist activities as their funds dwindled, Donald Trump did something remarkable. He was actually, ironically, at a meal at Mar-a-Lago with the president of China, President Xi, and excused himself for a moment when summoned, had to go to a back room to authorize because they had Soleimani, the Iranian official, the head of their military and coordinator of all their terrorist activities. He had landed in Iraq. Presumably, there had been rumors that there was going to be a big attack on military U.S. installations there. And the fact that he had showed up in Iraq right after that led them to believe that he was there to coordinate that plan that had kind of leaked out through international channels. Anyway, they had him isolated. They knew he was in a car en route from the airport in Iraq. To points unknown, and they needed the president to authorize a drone strike on that vehicle to take out the number one terrorist on earth, who just happened to be an Iranian government official, which a lot of administrations without a backbone would have really been leery to do. Because again, you are not only taking out somebody that everybody knew was the biggest terrorist in the world, but also the fact that he was shielded by this alleged immunity of being an Iranian top-ranked official. That would have deterred a lot of people that didn't have the conviction that Donald Trump did as commander in chief. Trump ordered the strike. It was carried out minutes later. The car that Soleimani was riding in completely destroyed, and so was he. And Trump then returned to his meal with President Xi, said to him, I'm sorry, but we had a major situation. I had to authorize the removal of the largest terrorist on the planet, so I apologize for having to step away. What a message was that to send to the our chief rival. Let's cut it to the chase of what it is, to inform President Xi that he had just taken out Soleimani in the space of a few minutes of just stepping away from the table. And, you know, that message received, I'm sure, around the world that Donald Trump, as Commander in Chief of the United States, was not a guy to be tinkered with. And the message was loud and clear on the Iranians as well, because Soleimani, one of their top guys, so easily singled out and targeted and taken out, it had to be a loud and clear message to the Ayatollah. And I don't understand the government structure there. I guess Ayatollah, because you remember back in the days of Jimmy Carter, even when they took 400 Americans hostage in Iran and held them for, I'm sorry, it was the 400 was the days that they were held. I think it was 80 hostages, whatever it was a ridiculously large number. And they had them captive for a year and a half. Before Ronald Reagan stepped in. But that was the Ayatollah Khomeini, who was about 900 years old at that time. And now they're calling this guy the Ayatollah Khomeini, which I don't know if he's a relative. I don't know if he's a clone. I don't know what the structure is. But that's the high leader in Iran. Although they have a president, the religious leader and the head of the government, I guess it would be akin to the monarchy structure of old Europe, where you had prime ministers and people that ran the day-to-day government, but you've got these exultant, holy leaders that are in charge of a lot of these backward, you know, archaic medieval countries who still have these exultant rulers. But the message was loud and clear to the Ayatollah Khomeini and anybody else that was in his ruling class that, you know, we can take Soleimani out, your guy's top military guy. You would not be that hard to identify and take out as well. And Donald Trump, by doing that, demonstrated to them that, you know, we're not going to mess with these people that you're financing and encouraging to do a lot of different things. We're going to go right to the source and target you. And that's what's been lost in the Biden administration, because, of course, the first thing they had to do when they came into office was to undo anything that Donald Trump had done successfully. All of the mayhem on the border with 8 million people and counting entering this country illegally since Joe Biden took office was completely under control at the end of the Trump term. He had shut off every bit of traffic at the border with the policies of remain in Mexico. You know, they were still giving people these opportunities, at which by law is permissible, that you can have an asylum hearing if you think you need to leave a country and be considered for entry into the United States to protect you or your family if you're under serious threat or there's other conditions. They were issuing the same passes, the same hearing schedules that have become routine in this border nonsense that we've been experiencing the last couple of years. Of course, they're handing these people that are just strolling in, okay, we can have your hearing in 2029, or, you know, I think there's some that get 2027 or 2028, but it's way down the road. And instead of making them remain in Mexico, okay, off you go then. We'll see you in September of 2028 for your hearing. That's not the way it's drawn up. That is taking advantage of the law with a loophole to just turn people loose in this country. And not only are we turning people loose in the country, we're turning people loose in the country that we don't really know who they are. We haven't done any proper background. We don't know if they're terrorists or they have ill wishes on in terms of what they're doing here. And even the FBI director, Christopher Wray, has had several hearings before Congress saying Americans need to be diligent. We have got a severe terrorist threat right now in our country because people that we know have entered are on the terrorist watch list. But yet we just open the front door and let them stroll right into the country. And it is an abominable situation that the FBI is warning us that we are in danger because of policies that the administration they serve under have made it possible. So the bottom line is you've got to go to the source, folks. And the fact that the Biden administration came in and undid everything that Trump had successfully done, particularly with Iran, because they had, with the suppression of Iran, also completely stomped out and eliminated the threat of the ISIS terrorist network. And they did it in just a couple of months. They really came in and froze all their assets and cut them off and hunted them down and got rid of their top leadership. And the policy in the Middle East was working great. Saudi Arabia, who has been kind of a double agent for a long time, supporting American presidents, but on the other hand, up to no good behind the scenes. Trump went to Saudi Arabia. They loved his tough talk and his demeanor and his leadership and strength. And that's what these people respond to. They don't want some weak-kneed, babbling, way over the hill, who was never very effective, even in his prime. Joe Biden, even during his Senate career at the height of it, where he was chairman of committees and was one of the most visible people in the Senate, he's never really been known for his intellect or his abilities. He's just a guy that never had a real job, got into government right away in his 20s. On his first job was basically to serve in some podunk town city council. The guy's a great American success story, but he has been in government service and, quote, public service to facilitate self-service. And all the stuff you hear about the Biden business deals, the Biden family business, all of their foreign business interests, they have no business, folks. They have no product. They provide no service. The Biden family business is Joe Biden and access to Joe Biden and influence peddling, paying millions of dollars for intervention by Joe Biden. And also James Biden, his brother, who had no experience in terms of housing or different aspects of that industry. Suddenly, when the Iraq war ended and Joe Biden was in office, as I think that was right at the end of his Senate career, but he still had powerful influence, soon to become vice president. But when all that went down, there was a huge housing contract that the U.S. government was going to award, and they had some finalists. Amazingly, just a couple of months before that decision was made, James Biden hooked on with a New York-based housing development company. And lo and behold, guess who got the $80 billion government contract just a couple of months later to build a bunch of housing and renovate a lot of the areas of Baghdad that had been destroyed in the different conflicts involving Saddam Hussein. Well, it was the firm that James Biden, who had no experience in housing, just happened to join just a few months before. So it's not even direct influence sometimes in terms of payments coming in. It is bribery and influence that gives your family members the opportunity to have these big windfalls. And if you don't think that was going to Joe Biden, and they've got 20 different shell companies that they've identified, they have bank records. Joe Biden did not pay $4 million for a second home in Delaware with cash from what he made as the vice president of the United States. This is the greatest gig in the world, politics. And again, I scoff every time I hear somebody say what a great public servant somebody in government is, because government is not public service. Government is self-service. That's why these people fight for these jobs tooth and nail to try to stay on board and make sure that they don't give up the greatest gravy train that they've ever been on. Their seat is sacred and it is financially lucrative, and the power rush and all the different things that they find out they can manipulate to enrich themselves. And Joe Biden is the poster boy for all of that. But you know, you have to scratch your head a little bit and wonder what are the powerful influences at work here. Joe Biden stepping in to the White House after Trump, who of course succeeded the Obama administration. The Obama administration, of course, had just gone to great lengths to include Iran in all of their discussions and policies, and lifted all economic sanctions. Their chief advisor for the Obamas is Valerie Jarrett, who still not only works with them, but shares a house with Barack and Michelle Obama in Washington, D.C., just 3 miles from the White House. This Biden administration, the strings, the people within the administration, all with the Obama roots, the de facto president of the United States for all of these last 3.5 years, has been a two-term previous president, Barack Obama. And Valerie Jarrett, whose parents were American, but she was born in Iran and spent a lot of her youth there. There's just some unsavory ties to this obsession with keeping the Iranians front and center. Joe Biden canceled every policy Trump had to isolate and bankrupt Iran. They immediately popped up and started being a successful purveyor of money and distributor of assets and military equipment to all of these terrorist organizations. And all of them have the common goal of wiping Israel off the face of the earth. So all of this misguided protest about the Israelis conducting genocide against the Palestinians. The Israelis are in existential struggle right now for their survival. And you know, the story is so much more involved and intricate than these people parading around in the streets thinking the Israelis have occupied territory that rightfully belongs to the Palestinians. If you've listened to the show, I've told you repeatedly that this area of the world has been in the hands of every major empire in since the beginnings of time, going back to the Babylonians and the Assyrians and the Greeks and the Romans and the Egyptians, even before that, all the way up until the Byzantine Empire and all of the different really stronghold Persian influence for many years, which is the modern day Iraq. And at the end of that, the ultimate imperialists, the British, had control of that area. This has never been anybody's solid area. And I also made the point a couple weeks ago, name me one place in the world that has not been, quote, occupied by others, forcing the other inhabitants to either settle in to the and assimilate to their new influence or to move to other areas. This is the pattern of the world since the beginning of mankind. So this is not an oppressor and a poor victim group. This victim group that's being decried for is basically run by a terrorist organization where their leadership lives in Qatar in mansions, while the people of Palestine, of the Palestinian territory, Gaza, and those areas live in squalor and starvation and are indoctrinated to blame Israel for all their problems when it's their own people pulling the strings. And the government of that area is Hamas, who is a recognized worldwide terrorist organization. So the people that are being so pitied here have picked their poison. And, you know, I have great sympathy for any non-combatant running into problems and being victimized by these kind of conflicts. But the bottom line, everybody, is that this is a complicated situation that would be a lot less complicated if the Iranians got the hell out of the terrorist business. And the only way to send that message is not to destroy some empty warehouse that may or may not have housed munitions, but it's to target the top leadership of Iran. Take a few of those guys out, send the message again that, you know, we know what the head of the snake is, and it's you guys. And we're not going to mess around here with these operatives that you don't give, you know, a care in the world about. All you want to do is finance them to achieve your ultimate ends. Well, I say you got to go right to the source and deal with this problem. And that is the leadership of the country, the basically just devious and evil country of Iran. And that's the whole story this week on Need to Know. Football and international conflict. You can't get it anywhere else, folks, but right here with Kip Kiefer and Need to Know. Join Tony Curry and I this week for Kiefer and Curry. We'll have some great topics, as always, on that. And the starting lineup Saturday mornings in Birmingham and throughout most of Alabama, ABC 3340, 10:30 a.m. this Saturday. We're going to have a great show. Al Del Greco, the former great kicker for the Tennessee Titans, a participant. He actually played in the Super Bowl, had a great NFL career. Al joins us on Saturday at 10:30. You do not want to miss that. Thanks, everybody, for tuning in for everything you need to know.
This has been a special presentation of Tony Curry Radio.